How's it going and welcome back to On The Wire, a proud member of the Pitcher List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows rating reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe, and as always, I am joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings. Hey, Kevin, happy Father's Day to you. And curious, besides, of course, working on your Sunday fab, do you have any fatherly plans set up for Sunday?
Thank you. Happy Father's Day to you as well. Unfortunately, I had great plans. My 10-year-old daughter and I were going to be traveling to Omaha this weekend. My wife ended up having to go out of town, and it was actually my daughter's idea that we should drive back a day early to catch the day game in Kansas City for Father's Day. That would have been amazing. Unfortunately, my wife unexpectedly got called out of town, so we'll have to take a rain check on that, but we'll make it to another game.
That would have been great. And Omaha as well, of course, you could hit up a game in Omaha as well. So
that was the plan.
Yeah.
College World Series starts this weekend as well.
I'm going to go ahead and give an extra shout out, extra Father's Day shout out to our guest today. We're extremely lucky to have with us the Fab Whisperer himself, Vlad Sedler, to help us break down our Fab options going into Sunday night's deadline. Vlad, of course, can be found on the Twitter at RotoGut in his work over at FantasyGuru.com and ElitePantasy.com. Our must reads, and later on the show we'll pick Vlad's brain about what he's learned each year that's helped him build such a successful reputation. But for now, we're just ecstatic to have Vlad with us on the show and talk some fab. Vlad, how has the season been treating you so far?
Hey, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me on. Nice to be indoors instead of outside in the 100-degree Southern California heat and here talking baseball and prepping for Fab. So thank you for having me. It's been a wild ride. It's really been, it feels like one of the toughest seasons ever. And it's really funny how humbling our game is and how much confidence so many of us had going into the season and during draft season. And even the first month and a half, just everything just going so smoothly. And then all the injuries hitting at the same time. And then forcing yourself to make fab decisions that you're not necessarily comfortable with. And sometimes getting a pitcher gets blown up or somebody gets injured on a Monday and you lose them for the week, for the half week. But hey, we keep trucking, we keep grinding on, and still a good chunk of the season left to go.
Nice. Yeah, we got up in Indianapolis, we're getting hit with some of that Southern California heat as well. Though it's also mixed with giant hailstorms at the end of June. So that's a nice mix. We're in one of those parts of the country where you can say, if you don't like the weather, wait a couple hours and you get something new. And you go from 90-degree weather to hail. I saw pictures of hail, like hail nuggets the size of golf balls. So
wow.
You take what you can get. All right, cool. We're going to get right into it. We start off with some news and notes section. We try to stick with some news and notes from the past week that might affect your fab. And just as a fair warning to everybody, we are recording this a little earlier than we normally do. And we're recording this Saturday afternoon, East Coast time. So we're in the middle of the day. So if anything happens on their Saturday night games, adjust your dials accordingly. So Vlad, I'm going to start with you. The Marlins got back shortstop Miguel Rojas and starter Cody Petit from the injured list on Friday. Should either of them be a fab priority in leagues where they were dropped?
Those two guys are definitely deeper league gentlemen, 15 teamers, really 12 teamers. I don't think either of them brings you much use unless you're truly desperate. But Miguel Rojas, for example, is somebody that is probably going to lead off occasionally because he does hit the lefties so well. And he is a plus contact hitter and has a little bit of speed as well, a very minor pop. But yeah, you catch him at the right time, he's somebody that can be helpful in 15 teamers. And then Cody Petit, to me, it just seems like he, so long as he stays healthy and does not go back on the IL, and that was a fluke thing, he'll be a part of this rotation because this Marlins rotation is absolutely decimated. Honestly, just nobody left. At some point, maybe Sixto will come back. Maybe Eliezer will come back. We just don't know. But for the most part, I think Cody Petit will have somewhat of a long leash. And just from the fact that he's pitching in that ballpark is a good thing. I think he's somebody that can have value in 15-teamer.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see Rojas back in the leadoff spot occasionally. He did bat fifth, so he's still in the heart of that order since returning from the IL, so something to monitor there. Kevin, what is going on with Edward Olivares? The Royals simply can't make up their mind on where they want him to play, it seems, as not position-wise, but just like in what town. Since May 30th, he's been called up three times and optioned the same number of times, most recently being optioned back down to AAA on Thursday. How concerned are you about Oliveira's outlook for fantasy purposes the rest of the season? Are you holding or dropping this weekend where you might have him?
Well, as somebody that's had him in at least one lineup every time he's been sent back down, I can't do it any longer unless we see a long stretch of him being up with the Kansas City club. If you need the spot, I unfortunately, he is a drop. I really would like to see them give him a nice long look at the MLB level, but there, you know, Ryan O'Hearn is mashing at AAA. And with Benintendi out, there will probably be some more moves in that outfield, but it might not even be Oliveras coming up next time. So unfortunately, I don't trust it. And if I need the spot, I'm going to have to cut him loose.
All right, moving over to Minnesota, their entire infield left Wednesday's game early with Josh Donaldson being removed after feeling tightness in his right calf and Aaronson Simmons leaving with left ankle tightness. Are you worried about either? And if so, who would you be watching to take over either position for the Twins if either of them miss any extended time?
So as we record this, and it's getting to be afternoon West Coast time, and on Saturday here and a little bit later in the afternoon for you guys, the Twins lineup isn't out yet, but I do think there's a possibility that Josh Donaldson returns. I feel like if he was to hit the injured list, they probably would have already done. I just happened to see RotoWire's projected lineup, and they have both him and Simmons in. So we'll see how that shakes out, and I don't know if necessarily their guy is going to hit the IL. Things will get a little crowded here. Right before the show, we were talking about how Williams' studio was just demoted because Byron Buxton is up and he's in the lineup, could be very easily leading off. And they're against a lefty today, so probably no Trevor Larnach in that lineup. But they have a lot of moving pieces there. It's this interesting lineup. It's one that I'm actually focusing on in my write-up, my Fab column over this weekend. But yeah, just the outfield just gets so much more crowded with Kepler back and Buxton, and there's Kirilloff there. He could switch over into the quarter infield. Sano could move to third. So many ways that they can shift things. But the key there is that Donaldson's back. If he's not back, then I'm not really sure what they do with third base. Jorge Polanco is pretty flexible. He's obviously been a really good hitter for them at the top of the lineup. He could play second. He could play short. He could even play third if you really need it.
That's nice. We'll be looking forward to seeing that official lineup as soon as it's plugged in. Obviously, as you're listening to this, you'll be well aware of what the lineup was. Kevin over in Philadelphia left Wednesday's game early and was quickly placed on the IL with a grade 1 groin strain, and he should be missing multiple weeks. Who is filling in Philadelphia's infield while Segura is sidelined? And is it anyone worth bidding on this weekend?
I've been a fan all season long of Brad Miller, used him in spots. He's been pretty cold recently, but he probably gets a little more playing time here. He is not in the starting lineup today. Luke Williams at second base and Ronald Torres at shortstop. They've been running those two out there at the middle infield spots on occasion already this season. The problem with the Phillies is they're off Monday and Thursday this week, and then they'll have 2 7-inning games on Friday against the Mets in that doubleheader. And with these guys shuffling in and out, there's a really good chance that any or all of them only play one of the 2 7-inning games. And then they get Taijuan Walker and Jacob DeGrom on the weekend. So I don't have interest in any of these guys, for at least for this week anyway.
It's a good call out looking at the schedule ahead, especially for the following weekend. Vlad, the Astros placed Alex Bregman on the injured list with a left quad strain, and manager Dusty Baker didn't seem too confident that he'd see Bregman back anytime soon. Houston recalled Abraham Toro from AAA to take Bregman's place on the roster and apparently also starting at third base as well. Toro started in the hot corner for the first 2 days up and made a good impression, going 2 for 4 with his first combo meal of his major league career on Thursday. What are you expecting out of Toro in both the short term while Bregman's out and for the rest of the season, assuming Bregman does return sometime, say, around the All-Star break?
Well, I got bullied, I don't know whatever the term is, by Toro that day. So the day that he came up, I wrote up for Elite Fantasy the DFS content that day. And then I noticed that he was popped in. He was in that lineup and he was dirt cheap. He was like 2,300. And I had him in my original lineup, my original build. And I don't know, somehow I ended up tweaking and taking him out. Little did I know he was going to hit that massive combo meal. That's the difference between, you know, not cashing or and a lot of money. So That one stung, but I do think he's going to be a fab target this weekend just for the fact that the Astros have a good schedule this week. It looks like he's going to continue to play third. I don't know, maybe not every day, but Bregman's out a while. So this could be an opportunity for him to establish himself. He's, you know, really middle of the pack average major leaguer as far as power is concerned and that sort of thing. But I'll be interested in 15 teamers, where people have him or how much he's going to go for in comparison to just some of the random guys. Like, there really isn't much on the waiver wire in 15 teamers. You know, G-Man Choi, Jake Bowers, Bobby Dalbec, Pujols, really not much there. So perhaps people hope to try to maybe ride the bull with Toro there.
Yeah, you mentioned Houston has a good schedule coming up this week. They also don't have an off day until July 5th. So lots of games to play between now and then with no off days for Toro and the rest of the Astros lineup. Kevin, Zach Gallen returned for the Diamondbacks but didn't go very well. How concerned are you about Gallen's performance moving forward? And is it too early to be considered dropping him, assuming that injury is not fully behind him?
I think if you've held him this long, you have to continue to hold if possible. All reports are he came out of the game healthy. So I think I may not start him, but you got to hold on to him, see if he builds up some innings and starts to perform better. The injury is a concern, but we're having such an issue with pitching injuries this season that we got to hold on to some of these guys. And I think it's going to get worse. Everything we're hearing about, the sticky stuff that officially finally goes away Monday, even though it's been gradually built over the past couple of weeks, that's official on Monday where the suspensions can start. Last year's abbreviated schedule has a lot to do with all these injuries. I just think somebody like Zach Gallen, we got to hold on for a little while if we can.
So a follow-up question on that, and for both of you guys, with the potential suspensions coming for pitchers, especially starters coming up, would you guys be considering keeping more pitchers on your bench in like an NFBC league rather than having a deep hitter bench to fill in for possible lineup injuries? Of course, in NFBC where you can swap out your lineup halfway through the week as the pitchers are stuck there, but just for the sake of not having to fight through Fab each week, holding a deeper pitching bench. Vlad, do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's difficult. It's really team dependent, just the context of your team. And if you at least have coverage, right? If you have a couple of bench guys that really have 3-4 positions of eligibility and they can cover across the board with CI, MI, MI outfield, then that's good. So obviously with the hitters, you don't want to take any goose eggs whatsoever. So as long as you have the coverage in that regard, I think then you can work on getting a little bit of a deeper pitching bench. But even then, so those pickings are slim, right? A lot of times, even the guys we're bidding on, we're not very comfortable with their matchups. Sometimes it's like, oh, Zach Davies, he's been great this past month. Let's just plug him in, an easy one against Miami, and then boom, 8 runs. Even the safe stuff, the safe guys aren't necessarily all that safe.
Yeah, I agree with that. In keeper leagues, I think the whole scenario changed for me for the rest of this season. We're 9 months away from most drafts, and I'm not trusting that any pitcher is a keeper for next season right now. So if I'm not in contention, selling my pitchers for whatever I can get. On the other way, if I am in contention, yes, I'm stockpiling my bench with as many pitchers as I can right now in those leagues.
All right. Well, speaking of stashing pitchers, Vlad, with Luis Severino experiencing a setback in his attempt to return from Tommy John surgery, and of course, Noah Syndergaard having his own setback a few weeks ago, how worried should Chris Sale stashers be going as they continue to see tweet after tweet of everybody checking him out, doing bullpen sessions, both in Worcester and in Boston?
The notion of ace pitchers that were waiting to come back either from long-term injury or from Tommy John, it's always a crapshoot. It's really difficult. And even something like with Carrasco, what he's been dealing with, you know, I found myself in a position going into draft saying, I'm not going to draft these guys at all. I'm just not going to touch them. I'm going to end up getting hit with guys with injuries on my team as is. And I'm playing in leagues with no IL, so I can't hold these guys for long periods of time. With Carrasco, I took him in a main event in the 21st round as like my sixth pitcher because I thought I could get away with it and that he would be back a lot earlier than he would. I invested in Sixto Sanchez and that news hit. So we're all a little bit now gun shy with these guys. Severino, then he had a setback. Who? Same thing with Syndergaard. So who really knows? And you would think that the Red Sox, especially that they have a good team this year and it looks like they could be competing, they're going to want a healthy Sale in the playoffs if they can get there. And they're going to baby him. They're going to do everything they can to bring him along. This is a very poor rotation. I wouldn't say poor, a little below average. They need an arm like Chris Sale's. They need him to be healthy. They need him to be good. But in the beginning, when he comes back, how long will he go? Are they going to push him 5-6 innings? And when even is that? You know, we're on the All-Star break, end of July. How long can we wait? A lot of us don't have the luxury of waiting on guys on IL because we already are hit with a bunch of other guys that we have on IL.
Yeah, a lot of things I read or heard about Chris Sale or the plan for Chris Sale, at least in the offseason, was a lot of babying or a lot of plans for bringing him along very slowly, even when he comes back later on in the season. I was never really expecting him to be a game changer, at least as a starter. Now, if he were to come back as a reliever, he could actually have probably a little bit more value than if they do push him into that starter role, at least at the beginning. To your point, they're going to want him for playoffs, assuming that they continue on this run and get into the playoffs this year. So that might still be the play in Boston. All right. And Kevin, we'll finish it off with this. A couple of questionable injuries. Jose Ramirez left Friday's game after being hit on the foot by Kyle Crick, while Andrew Vaughn was hit in the face, sliding into second base, I believe. Are either of these situations worth monitoring? And if so, is there anything actionable from either the Cleveland or the Chicago White Sox lineup changes to come from either of their continued absences? I believe Joe Ram is not in the lineup today.
Yeah, and that lineup didn't come out extremely late, but other lineups for that start time were out quite a bit before. So I wonder if it was possible that he might have been in today's lineup. Looking at a whole lot there, I thought I was pretty excited for a brief moment with Ernie Clement, who came into the game. Now, Yu Chang had already pinch hit a couple innings earlier, so he wasn't available. And he is starting at third base today, Yu Chang. Clement, when I saw 43 stolen bases in 1,000 at-bats in the minors, I thought, ooh, maybe there's something here. But he got caught 20 times in two seasons when he accumulated 35 of those steals. So they're not going to turn him loose, even if he does get the playing time. And I'm a little I think Jose Ramirez will be back, even if he rests until Thursday, because they have an off day on Wednesday. Then he's only going to miss for this upcoming week, Monday and Tuesday. And I expect him back prior to that. So I don't see a lot going on there. I got burnt in a similar situation. I picked up Andy Burns in a couple of spots from Vlad's Dodgers, hoping he would get more playing time than he did this week. He didn't even get a start, just four pinch hits. And I probably would see the same thing happening with these guys now. Probably won't get the playing time we would hope for. So I'm staying away.
All right, well, that's going to do it. That's going to wrap up our news section of the pod. As always, try to keep it focused to news that might affect your FAB considerations this coming Sunday night. And we may have left some stuff out, other important things worth knowing. And of course, you should be listening to the First Pitch podcast every day to stay up to date with all these news and notes that we might have missed here. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, Vlad, I wanted to take this time to pick your brain just a little bit about you've developed quite the reputation for yourself, both as fantasy player being very successful, but also by having the Fab Whisper nickname bestowed upon you, and which is amazing. But I'm curious to know, that doesn't come overnight. Something like the success doesn't come overnight. The reputation obviously is built up over a long period of time. And I want to know, I'm curious to know, what are some of the things that you've taken away from season after season of playing that you've learned that you've been able to take into the following season and make adjustments that have allowed you to fine tune your game? Are there like a couple of like key points that like really stick in your mind that you've been able to take with you from season to season?
Yeah, I think that the very biggest one is the philosophy on what looking at FAB as what you're expecting to happen as opposed to what just happened, because it's very much human nature. It's, you know, built into us to overreact to recency bias. How many times we've seen somebody hit, Patrick Wisdom hits four home runs over the weekend. All of a sudden he's going for four times the price we originally projected. And this happens every week. And if you've played fantasy for a lot of years, you continue to see it. The problem is a lot of people can't get over that hump of not wanting to chase either the shiny new toy or the player that just went off, and being able to shift that into looking in the context of what is to come and to looking at more important things like playing time, where they're hitting in the lineup, who they're facing, what their schedule is, which obviously you guys do a great job of that here on the podcast. And I know Kevin's a pretty good fabber himself. So all those things, looking forward as opposed to looking back, and really being cautious with how you're allocating your funds. You don't have to be super precise. And like the Ariel Cohen, for example, has like his per week budgeted amount, like scheduled, like he's really fine-tuned in the math side of things of how he allocates his budget. I don't do that as much. I, of course, want to save a certain amount for the stretch run, for after rosters expand, and even for after the All-Star. And I feel like this is a season even more so. Like this year, for example, the big adjustment is not overspending now, because I know I'm really going to need this money for the last couple of months because of the frequency of injuries, because of the wildness and madness of the season, and the fact that I don't have an IL and I want to be able to field a full lineup. But it all starts with not overpaying for last week's flavor of the week and looking ahead to the schedule, even a couple weeks ahead. Who's facing some bad pitching? Who's got strong platoon splits? Who's facing a bunch of lefties coming up, and they're a hitter that happens to crush lefties? So on and so forth. There's really so much to it, but I think that's where you start.
Yeah, that's good. Vlad, when you have to make those adjustments in season, you're talking about your plans to make adjustments this coming season through injuries and what have you, like in the past, and we'll cut out 2020 because the adjustments for 2020 were different than every other year. But in the past, what kind of adjustments have you found yourself having to make in season to your FAB strategy, if any? And as a whole, when do you typically find yourself having to make those strategy adjustments? Is it like an early going, like something happens early on in the season, you have to completely flip? Or is it more of a late season stretch run kind of adjustment?
I think it starts in the draft. Like I think over the last few years, I want to make sure that I'm comfortable with the pitchers on my squad, and I'm more comfortable drafting good pitchers early because I feel like they're a more stable commodity, of course, until they get injured, and then that's that. But I want to not have to force myself to stream bad pitchers. And it's something that even all these years, I can't get over it. I'm still get lured in and suckered into those guys that are like, oh, this guy just came up, he's gonna be great. Like Corbin Martin last month, for whatever reason, I just wrapped my head around the fact that this is it. He's just gonna run with it the rest of the year. And he crushed me and then got sent to the minors. And had I not got hit by a couple of injuries at that point, I wouldn't have even been in a position to have to draft a rookie, to play him on a two-step week where he didn't even get the two starts. And so had I had some bench depth there, I would have been able to do that. Instead, I had Carrasco and I had Sixto, these guys that I'm waiting on, and I didn't have a solid guy that I could plug in there. So some of the adjustments I feel like starts with draft and building a quality team that addresses your weaknesses. So you're overcompensating for those weaknesses. As for this season, my adjustments have been really lowering the amount I'm spending and putting in more dollar bids. Like over the years, I never put in a dollar bid because usually on most teams I have higher in the standings, which means if I put in a dollar, someone else puts in a dollar, they're going to get it because they're lower than me in the standings. So I'd always start with a $2 bid. But even now I'm shaving and chipping away. I'll put in 8 guys under my conditionals and make a bunch of them $1. And hey, shockingly enough, the bidding activity isn't so heavy where I'm actually getting some of these guys for a dollar. So saving money has been a big strategy for me this year.
Kevin, I'll flip that question over to you as well. What adjustments have you found yourself having to make, especially in a TGFBI where I know you've been very vocal about being very active, but yet still not being able to jump over that barricade, at least that one team. But what in all of your FAB leagues, have you found yourself having to make adjustments different than what you thought you were going to have to do coming into the season?
Yeah, I think what I took away from 2020 was it was a lot easier to let guys go. And I'm trying really hard to carry that over. I still have some guys that I probably should have cut long ago, should have let some of these stashes go. I still have Bobby Witt Jr. in a couple of spots. Probably shouldn't be there, but I'm really trying to. It's one of those things that we know we should do anyway. Last season, it was much easier to do. And I'm trying to continue to bring that forward, letting guys go. Like Vlad brings it up all the time. This isn't season-long fantasy is actually 26 individual weeks of fantasy and trying to concentrate more on that aspect.
That's really good insight from both you guys. Appreciate it. All right. We'll move on from that. We'll get into the heart of the episode right here into our recommendations section. Of course, we break it down based on different categories throughout your fantasy roster. And of course, we're at a point in the season. You should have been doing it for the last couple of weeks, really focusing on the categories that you can make the most strides in your leagues and not just maybe doing an overall approach, unless it just happens to work out in your standings. But really focusing on the categories that you can make a big dent in. So we will start off, as always, in our power department. Kevin, I'll start with you. Are there any guys out on the wire that we should be keeping an eye out that might be able to deliver a couple home runs this week or put a dent in your RBI totals that might be available?
Yeah, this my first guy. He's universally owned in 15-team leagues, but he's available in 12% of OCs, and he's only rostered on 27% of Yahoo leagues, Adam Duvall. And the big night last night, it's too late for that, but we've seen this from him throughout his career. When he goes on these runs, he hits home runs in bunches. And so in the leagues where he is available, he's definitely a guy I'd be looking to.
Yeah, Duvall is actually, as I put together my article for the weekend, he's pretty much the top option in 12-teamers. He's only available now at this point in 12% of those leagues, but I think he's an absolute priority wherever you can grab him. And power just seems really shy. It just doesn't seem like it's very plentiful here on the waiver wire. So I think he's really a top. I will say you also have guys like Hunter Renfrow is available in a certain percentage of, I think, 15% of 12-team OCs as well. Austin Hayes might be a guy that we can utilize. They've got a 7-game week going on. And then also somebody who seems really under rostered in 12-teamers is Trevor Larna. If you notice, we talked about him earlier on the show, and he's hitting third in that lineup. He occasionally gets to lead off. I understand Buxton's back, but this Twins team faces 6 of 7 righties, I believe, or 5 of 6 righties this week, and he's going to get into that lineup, and he's been hitting really well, and people don't seem to want to pick him up in 12-teamer.
Yeah, I love the Hunter Renfrow call, Vlad. Bubba tweeted out a couple of weeks ago that each week writing his article that he wants to include the same guys. And I'm like, every week when I'm writing my article, I look at the rostership of Hunter Renfrow in 12-team leagues. And even 10-team leagues with 3 outfielders, he's in the top 30 amongst outfielders in 4 of our 5 categories, including batting average. Mm-hmm. He should be rostered in every league, and he's available in over 80% of Yahoo leagues.
And then, of course, we have the promotion of Jesus Sanchez coming up. Kevin, I saw you wrote some notes here on him. You know, how I'm just going to steal these questions and to throw them right back at you. And how are you prioritizing a guy like Sanchez who's getting the call up for Miami?
I think in 15-team leagues where I need some power, he's off to a bit of a slow start. And hopefully that keeps the Fab price is a little lower this week, but that's why we grab him this weekend. If he has a nice week next week, warms up, starts getting used to the major league pitching, then of course his price is going to skyrocket and everybody's going to be looking to add him next week. So this is the weekend to do it.
So that was my question that I threw in there on the outline. But I am really curious, Kevin, that's the part I don't know, because we've seen obviously really good minor leaguers. Oliveras, he gets sent down. Obviously that's the different scenario because of Dayton Moore and Mac Matheny, they're not playing him. He's, you know, he's riding the pine, even though he was up. Jesus Sanchez is playing every day. And I guess at some point, Corey Dickerson comes back. At some point, Garrett Cooper comes back. But I guess that's my question to you. How do you feel about Jesus Sanchez like actually sticking on the major league roster rest of the year? Because that's what I'm scared of. We have 400 left in your budget. You spend 150 to get him, and then he gets demoted. And as soon as Dickerson or someone's back, like, how do we handle that?
Yeah, that's what makes it tough. I won't spend that much. If it takes that much to get him, I won't have him. But I'll have $50 and $60 bids in there, hoping to get him in spots where he falls through the cracks. So that makes it more comfortable with that, definitely.
And we've seen Miami do things like that even just last year with Monte Harrison coming up and then being sent back down shortly after, Lewin Diaz as well. So they have done that with their hitters. Arguably, Jesus Sanchez is a much better prospect, much better hitter than any of those guys, at least with an all-around game, and has been producing this year in AAA. But he's not immune for something like that to happen to him.
And another thing, the prices on these guys aren't going to be what they would have been a month and a half ago. everybody has spent a lot more money this season, it seems like, than in a typical season. Some of it is we're still used to last season where it only had to last us 10 weeks. And then it just seems that first month of the season, spending was crazy in nearly all of my leagues. Nobody has a lot of money left. And so the prices are lower than what they would have been a month ago.
400 on Julian Merriweather? Sure.
Why not? Exactly.
No, it's funny you say that. That's exactly the point I was going to bring up is I actually had my first faux pas in an article that I actually felt bad about was I had Sammy Long, the Giants pitcher, projected pretty high in FAB. And I didn't really adjust for the fact that a lot of people don't have money left. And so I did have a couple people asking me, hey, why are you recommending 50 to 100 for Sammy Long, and you're bidding, because I put my bids out at there every week, and you got him for $10 or $15 in 15 teamers. How does that work? And yeah, and I thought about it, I felt bad. I'm like, well, maybe I should put some note in there about it's really based on money in the league, how much you have left. Typically, a guy like Sammy Long coming off that great outing, if he has longevity with the Giants roster rotation, is worth a $50 to $100 bid. But a lot of people just didn't spend that. And obviously, there were leagues where he went for over 100. Some leagues he went for 50, 60, which I think was pretty much the average number. And hey, I just happened to be in a league where I got him for 15. The backup was 11. People just weren't buying into it. So going forward, I'm going to have to be very cognizant of that. Like there's always that one guy in your league or gal who might spend, who has a lot of money, and they may throw it on Jesus Sanchez because they've been waiting for him to come up. But you're right. Most competitive winning bids will probably be lower in that 50 to 60.
And the people with money in your league, check their lineups for the past couple of weeks and see how active they are. Are they even paying attention anymore? We're already to that point.
Yeah.
You always see when you're going through the FAB results across NFBC, you always see the max of $50 to $100 on a guy, but there's always a min bid of a dollar or thereabouts. There's always that league. I can't find that league personally, but sooner or later I'll get in that league. All right. And then Vlad, is there any other sneaky picks out there in the power department that you're keeping an eye on?
I don't know if it's sneaky, but I just wanted to point out that things shift for the San Francisco Giants because they've played basically every game over the last 2 weeks has been against a right-handed starting pitcher, which means obviously that's good for a guy like Lamonte Wade, who's really earned a role as the leadoff man. And it's also a reason why Austin Slater hasn't played. He's played one game in the last 2 weeks because that's the only time they faced a lefty. This week, they are slated as of now. Things could shift, but they only have 5 games this week. That's the kind of the part that makes it not very exciting, but 3 lefties apparently. So that'll be some starts for Austin Slater. I think 2 of those on the weekend. So again, just somebody just deeper in the conditionals that if you need a live body who probably is chomping at the bit to get into some games and he hits lefties well, somebody in 15 teamers you can stash down there.
Austin Slater, 78% rostered across TGFBI, but on the bench in the majority of those teams that are still rostering, only started in 56% of those leagues. So still check your waiver wire. We say this every single week. It doesn't take a lot of time. Just check. If you're not sure, if there's a chance that a guy is available, type in his name, control F, whatever it is you need to do to find him, take a look. All right, we're going to move on. I'm going to move on to I have a question for you guys regarding our speed section. And it's not about a guy that you can pick up because he's universally rostered in a good majority of leagues. My concern is about Nick Solak and whether or not he actually is a speed option in Texas anymore. He's 100%, like I said, 100% rostered in 15 teamers in the main event, TGFBI. He's slowly being let go in 12 teamers, 97% rostered still in the OC, 92%. Rostered across the second chance leagues, which are 12 teamers as well on NFBC, and just 58% rostered across Yahoo. He still has the 93rd percentile in sprint speed with a 4.27 feet per second home to first speed, which is in line with guys like Tim Anderson, faster than Ronald Acuna, Randy Arozarena, and Taylor Trammell. All obviously speed guys. But he's only been sent 5 times with 3 successful steals this season. And that's a less than 5% rate based on the opportunities he's had, while the Rangers themselves tend to send runners at a much higher clip. About 6.7% of opportunities are taken as a team. So my question, and Kevin, I'll shoot to you first. Should fantasy managers that are relying on Solak moving forward for speed, should they be relying on him for speed? And if not, is he a clear drop at least in 12 teamers right now?
Unfortunately, it's getting that way. I only have him rostered on DCs, on my draft and holds, and I didn't realize how bad he's been recently. I just kept plugging him in there because he had such a great start to the season, and he was just one of those guys when I was setting my lineups. I'd look at the schedule. As long as they were playing games, I was plugging him in there, and I finally got him out of my lineups earlier this week when I realized he's just not been good at all. And yeah, in 12-team leagues, I would think there are better options out there.
Yeah, for Nick Solak, it's really been a struggle, right? Because that first month was off the charts. I literally went on Twitter and I took an L and I said, I was not a Nick Solak guy. I have no shares. And man, I was wrong. And then I took my L back a month later because he just really hasn't done much. And I don't know, there's sometimes you just have a feeling on guys. There are obviously a lot of great prospects that come up and he's a second rounder and he can kind of give you a little bit across the board. But for some reason, I just haven't had a great feel on him as a major leaguer or fantasy contributor, similarly to how I felt about Nomar Mazara over the years. And on that one, I'll take the W because he's just become just a guy. And not to say that Solak won't be better than him, but he just may end up being a guy that always gets overvalued for whatever reason, just like people just are infatuated with him. But then he never really truly delivers or lives up to the hype. The problem is, somebody that only has three swipes on the year is having problem making contact at the plate. I just can't trust him. What we do know, at some point, he's going to go on another run. He's going to go on another hot streak and go off. That's up to you if you want to drop him. But I think in most 12-teamers, there aren't enough good options on waivers for you to pick up, you know, that are better than Nick Solak right now.
That's fair. I think my just major concern is just the Rangers aren't sending him, at least at the same rate that they're sending other guys like Nate Lowe, and the fact that they're sending Nate Lowe more on a per opportunity basis, at least that's the concerning part for me, whether or not they've lost faith in Solak running, at least in the running the bases part, because he's obviously still playing. Still, you don't have any Solak, so I wouldn't ask if you were going to drop him for anybody else. But if you did, is there anybody on the wire that you might be looking at to take his place, at least specifically in the stolen bases and possibly even runs department?
Oh, man, I do think that, man, it's really tough because this would be players that are like 95 to 100% rostered in NFBC 12-teamers season. They would have to just be that diamond in the rough, just the random guy that was dropped, then perhaps one of those. But as far as the guys that are typically available, the top guy on my list for 12-teamers this week is Cesar Hernandez. He's 82% rostered in OCs. And I don't even know if I can make that move, but you could, right? Because runs, if you are looking for runs and you're looking for somebody that's probably due for some good batting average, Cesar Hernandez could get the job done. The five RBIs on Friday was pretty random. Other than that, really, there's really no one else. If you're in dire need of steals, I guess you can go with Nico Goodrum, but you're also taking on the risk of one of the worst bats, worst plate discipline guys in all of baseball.
Yeah, we talk about, Kevin, you mentioned that tweet from Bubba about wanting to place the same guys in your articles every single week. And yeah. I write a speed article for Pitcher List every week. And somehow Nico Goodrum keeps making his way onto that list just because the Tigers keep sending him. And he's going to hit his career high in stolen bases this year pretty easily, I think. And so he just keeps finding his way into my recommendation list in this category as well. Kevin, is there any speedsters out there that you've been eyeing or possibly at least watching?
Yeah, I still like Bradley Zimmer, and he's getting the start in center field every day for Cleveland, and they're still rolling about there. He's even hitting for decent average. Not any power to show yet, but he has shown some pop in the past in the minor leagues. He's still available in a third of main event leagues, so he's available in 15 teams as well if you need a little boost. He's worth it.
Yeah, the thing about Cleveland is they only have one off day next week, which is nice, but they do travel to Chicago, so they will lose a hitter in their lineup. I believe in Toronto is another American League team heading to a National League park next week as they travel to Miami. So something to keep an eye on there as well. And that segues us into our next category, our opportunities category. These are guys, obviously, that have a good opportunity ahead of them, whether they have a lot of games on their upcoming schedule, as Vlad pointed out with Austin Slater facing like-minded or like-handed pitchers. And they just have good matchups in general. So something I wanted to note before we get into specific players is just keeping an eye on the schedule. As you're looking over the guys that you're going to be looking at to fab, there are three teams that have a very long stretch of games coming up with no scheduled days off for the foreseeable future. Baltimore, their next day off is July 1st. As I mentioned earlier, Houston's next day off is scheduled for July 5th. The Dodgers don't have a day off until the 30th of June, so the end of the month. And for next week specifically, there's a whole bunch of teams, or more than a handful of teams, that have seven or more games slated for next week. So keep an eye on that for getting as many plate appearances as possible. Atlanta, Baltimore, Houston, Oakland, Texas, the Dodgers, and the Mets have at least seven games, with the Mets do have an off day, but they do have doubleheaders both on Monday and Friday. So, of course, those are shortened games, but with two doubleheaders in the week, there's still more innings than they normally would see without any extras. And Atlanta has eight games due to their doubleheader on Monday with the Mets. So something to keep an eye on there. And we had a question. We had a question in the Pitcherless Discord regarding a couple of Houston bats that are readily available, from what I can tell, across main events, so 15 teamers. And I wanted to get your guys' take. I know we talked about Abraham Toro a little bit earlier, obviously 0% rostered across the main, as he just was recalled from AAA. Chaz McCormick, only 2% rostered. And then Robel Garcia, who had a couple of decent games back to back, but really hasn't been playing very much. Vlad, I'll start with you, though. Are any of these guys rosterable? We'll keep Toro out of there because we've already mentioned that he's going to be a pretty popular ad. But between McCormick and Garcia, do you have any interest in any of them? And if so, what formats?
Sure. McCormick easily in 15 teamers. I think somebody that needs to be in your outfield bids, just because he's hitting well. And sure, he could cool off at some point, but he's getting the playing time and he's mixing in there. So yeah, got to stick with it. And he was also my 50th round gem in DCs back in the day. Nice. I'm telling you, it just shows just so how random. It's not like I'm some magical guru and just, I don't know. I just was feeling it and it worked. And sometimes it hits and sometimes it doesn't. Then you make sure that you point it out that you hit on your Chaz McCormick. So that's what I'm doing now. So I like him. Robel Garcia, I have no interest in. He really isn't getting the playing time. And man, you look at his strikeout numbers over the years, just in the minors, it's absolutely bananas. We're talking like a 35, 40% strikeout rate over the years. So he's 28 years old. He's no spring chicken. And there's a reason why he hasn't really had the opportunity to hit at the major league level. So yeah, no interest for me in Robel, but I do like Chaz.
And McCormick finding his way into the number two slot of the Houston lineup the last couple of days as well. So something worth of note. Kevin, do you have any opinions that may differ from what Vlad just said on these guys?
I agree 100%. And anybody that's playing even close to every day, as well as that lineup is clicking, the runs and RBIs are going to be there. So anybody that's in that lineup, I'm interested in.
All right, cool. Is there anybody else, Kevin, that you're noticing that might have good matchups coming up, might have a good opportunity ahead of them that didn't necessarily fit specifically in the speed or power?
A really deep one, and it's risky. It might not work, but Kelvin Gaudier is playing every day third base for the Kansas City Royals for some reason. And I liked him a lot when he was in Baltimore in their organization and never really got a full-time chance. Now he's getting one. It's not going really well, but if he had the at-bats to qualify, he's top 35 in MLB in hard hit and in average exit velocity. He's hitting the ball hard. He just has a 64% ground ball rate. So if anything comes of that and he can start not hitting the ball on the ground so much, he is hitting the ball hard. And we've seen that with guys in that organization like Hunter Dozier when he broke out in 2019 and had the nice season he was a gem for people that grabbed him off the waiver wire. So it's hopefully he can start lifting the ball a little bit, because he is hitting the ball really hard and he is playing every day.
Right. And it looks like, not sure when they might have a makeup game, but it does look like that Atlanta St. Louis game is postponed for today. Not sure if that'll be postponed to Sunday, but that means another doubleheader for Atlanta coming up as well. Vlad, any other guys that kind of fit this category, guys that kind of either can tap into your average or they just have a good schedule coming up that you have an eye out for?
No, the Mets have, I believe, a couple doubleheaders this week and pretty much a full schedule. And so we'll get a little bit more run out of Billy McKinney and Kevin Pillar in deep leagues before all the resources come back. Jeff McNeil's back on Monday, Conforto back at some point next week, probably Brandon Nimmo back the following week. So yeah, the gang is getting back together, and some of those guys that we've been using in 15 teamers won't be as valuable in a couple weeks.
Something we talked about last week, and they're as Kevin mentioned, there's not a whole lot of them being actually rostered. So, but the guys you mentioned, obviously, they'll take a hit once the, as you said, the gang gets back together in New York. All right, we'll do it for our hitters at the moment. We'll circle back into them in our wild card section at the end in case you guys want to throw anybody at the last second. But we'll move on to our pitchers recommendations, starting with typically starters, but guys you think they're going to, that can chip in a couple wins, maybe a win or case. Typically, this is your two starters that you feel comfortable with, and or maybe somebody that can vulture a win as a follower. They just have a really strong single matchup that are readily available on your wire. So I'll start with you. Any starters out there that are worth bringing onto your roster that might be available in, whether it's 12 or 15, is not sure. Doesn't matter.
It's really slim pickings. I will tell you that the two guys that I picked up a week prior, just for the hope that they would get two starts this week, one of them is Ross Stripling. He actually really impressed against the Yankees, sadly called out his teammate, Joe Panik, on the field. Apologized for that, but Stripling's really been turning it on. I'm looking like the stud that he was back with the Dodgers. He gets at Miami and home against Baltimore. So I think that's interesting. And then I think Alex Cobb looks back. He's going to face his former team, Tampa Bay. He's had some really big differential between his ratios and or his ERA and his expected numbers. So I think somebody we can look at. And then deeper leagues, I think we touched on Poteet earlier. Matt Manning will probably be somebody that people are excited about, but should probably be a little bit careful with. And then I also think that Bailey Ober, this kid looks good too, and he could definitely stick in the Twins rotation for the time being.
Let's expand on one of those points you said, Kevin. I'll throw it over to you. Is Matt Manning more than likely will be a top bid this weekend? But in your mind, should we have learned our lesson from the initial starts of like Logan Gilbert and other pitcher prospects that have been called up this year and struggled early on? Or are you a little bit more confident in Manning moving forward?
It's rough because he wasn't even performing well at AAA early this season, but we don't know. So as with all of the other guys, including the two Royals that came up this year, I'll have bids in, but he's not going to be on my roster on Monday morning.
We never know. All those bids are going down, like we talked about earlier.
That's true. There's possible. I haven't gotten any of them yet.
No, I have a feeling Manning's going to be right up there with Jesus Sanchez. People are just going to be excited for the name value, if nothing else. And so more often than not, he won't be in the on that min range when you look at the FAB results. Anybody else that you're looking at, Kevin, for starters or pitchers that can chip in a winner? A couple case.
Yeah, I really like Chris Flexen this week. He's available in most 12 team leagues and even over half of 15 teamers. My favorite matchup is the Rockies on the road in their first start after a long homestand, and that's what he gets on Tuesday. I like Flexen a lot this week.
All right, we'll move on away from our counting stats into what. Yeah, we're going to move right on to, as Vlad mentioned, talking about Ross, picking up Ross Stripling a little week early for a two start this week. We're going to go into our future two start options. So these are guys, a list of pitchers I put together that are currently slated to possibly have two starts the week of June 28th. So not this week, but the next week after, and are readily available in a good chunk of leagues. And so, Vlad, I'll start with you. What we typically do is look through the list. Give me at least one name here that you think you'd be targeting, just like you were Ross Stripling last week, for hope that they get the two start next week. Whether or not you start them this week or not is almost irrelevant. But are any of them of interest to you? And then give me a name on this list that you think other people are going to be interested in that they probably shouldn't be.
Man, it looks tough. I think immediately, I think guys like, even with the matchups, I think players like Mike Foltynewicz and John Gant, I think you need to cross off. Kyle Freeland, same thing. Two starts in Coors, I think is pretty dangerous. Carlos Martinez, I don't think anybody should be touching him. I guess Nick Pivetta is interesting. I did notice that despite him basically having his best season ever and racking up some wins at Boston, he actually leads the league in among qualified starters in walk rate. Which is, or maybe it's total walk. I forgot what it was, but him, John Gant, they're both up there. He walks a lot of guys. So that's dangerous, especially when you get patient teams. And then Jameson Taillon is somebody that I wish was good. I don't have many shares, but I just have him on some random 12-team OCs where I sometimes start him, I sometimes don't. Thankfully, I have enough depth where I've avoided some of the blowups. But I think I read somewhere he's only gone beyond 5 1/3 or 5 2/3 just once the entire season. Something's not quite right with him. Maybe he hasn't been using enough of the sticky stuff and now he can't. So that's too bad. But yeah, I think kind of slim pickings on the list, but you would hope that Jameson Taillon boosts it in the second half of the year.
Yeah, we got to keep this list to guys that are 50% rostered across Yahoo leagues or less. And then, of course, I included some rostership percentages for online championships and main events to solidify NFBC 12 and 15 teamers available. And Taillon still available in a good little number of online championships, 82% total rostered, 91% across the main event. So there's a couple leagues out there as well that he is available to take a chance on. And the matchups aren't that bad either. They get Kevin Royal this week, should match up against the Angels, which it is what it is. But then the Mets, though, as Vlad pointed out, the Mets may be a little bit closer to 100% by the time Taillon faces in New York. Kevin, anybody on the list that kind of stands out to you that Kevin either that Vlad missed or anybody else that should be avoided?
Pretty slim pickings looking for 2 weeks ahead, as Vlad said. A guy I've used a couple of times earlier in the season and typically doesn't give us any strikeouts, but I don't know where they came from in his last outing, Brett Anderson. I do like his matchups, and if he's going to do even half of that is more than we typically expect in the strikeout category from him. So he's somebody I probably will run out there in a couple of leagues where I'm short on depth in the pitching department.
Yeah, Brett Anderson, readily available across pretty much any format you play fantasy leagues in. 2% across Yahoo, not rostered on any online championship teams from what I can tell, and only rostered in 2% of the main event. Gets Arizona this week. He hosts Chicago Cubs and then travels to Pittsburgh next week. So like you said, not a bad set of matchups, at least in his two across this week and next. All right, we'll move on to our ratio category. Again, getting away from our counting stats, moving to our ERA and our WHIP categories. Kevin, any guys out there? Again, these are typically long relievers. Sometimes they're just pitchers that starters that you don't expect Ks from, but can help you chip away at that ERA and WHIP. Maybe they don't even go five innings, but you're confident in those ratio chippers. Anybody out there that fits that category?
Going back to something I mentioned a month ago, and probably 2 weeks in a row at that time, but it's been a month, so I'm bringing them up again. The Kyles, Kyle Finnegan and Kyle Zimmer, in leagues where you need a few innings and a few strikeouts. Now, Zimmer was an opener last night. That hurts. There's no way he's going to get us a win in that situation. But those two guys have been solid all season long.
Vlad, anybody that kind of fits this category for you? And then also, like, how often do you find yourself utilizing pitchers that aren't going to give you any counting stats, maybe necessary to chip away at those ratios?
I really try not to, because we say we're chipping away, but then, you know, that the guy ends up getting blasted or something happens. So it's dangerous, and you want to be able to rack up the strikeouts. And sometimes you don't know how many opportunities they're going to get. So I'm always really careful, hesitant, but sometimes you do want to play somebody like that over a bad starter. If you don't like the starting pitchers available for you, especially in the deeper leagues and 15 teamers, then you can go ahead and play a stud like that.
All right, then we will move on to guys that might be able to add to your counting stats, our everybody's favorite category this year and every year, and that is saves. Mike, I'll point this question over. Vlad, I'll start with you. And the fact that Rafael Dulis was put on the IL for the Blue Jays, curious to know if you think that there's anybody in the Toronto or Buffalo bullpen that could or possibly will steal save opportunities from Jordan Romano, or is just he's just going to run with it moving forward?
Yeah, he just seems like the guy for now. I don't really see anyone there. Even Dolis, who I was a believer in earlier this season, he struggled mightily. And yeah, so it's pretty much Romano there. I think that's one situation we don't have to worry about too much.
All right, Kevin, any other situations out there that you're monitoring or is worth talking about?
Yeah, as much as a Royals fan, it makes me cringe every time they roll him out there. But it looks like the Royals are sticking with Greg Holland at the moment. And he's ready, available, and even in 15-team leagues. So as much as I don't like it, does appear he's going to get any opportunities that they do have, at least in the short.
All right, great. I'm going to give you guys one last chance to throw out any other wild card speculative ads for any reason. You can mold that into a other category that if you look on our show notes a little lower, prospects you expect to get the call. I threw out a question in there about Shane Boz and whether or not you guys think he's worth a stash, or at least what format. Vlad, I think you listed a couple of guys early in the show that we haven't gotten to, so I don't know if this is where you want to mention those guys. But any other wild cards worth throwing out there to keep at least on your watch list moving forward?
Yeah, I think somebody that might go overlooked, that if you do have the availability for a stash, and it's actually a hitter, but Cole Calhoun appears like he'll be returning. They can really use his bat in their lineup there in Arizona. So he's a power bat that I think could be helpful. And then at some point, Alejandro Kirk comes back, the catcher. Obviously, most of us aren't holding a third catcher, but he's already hitting and could be back in a couple of weeks. And he's just going to help add more power and good hitting to an already incredible lineup.
Kevin, I'll throw to you. Anybody else? Any other wild cards or stashes? And I'm curious to see your opinion on Shane Baz, whether or not you'd be stashing him anywhere, as he was just promoted to AAA for...
Probably not yet. I expect him to make a few starts at AAA, so I'm probably not making that move yet, but definitely keeping an eye on how he does perform. And I just want to echo what Vlad said with Kirk. I, as much as I hate to have a catcher not in my starting lineup on my roster, if he's available, he can be a difference maker the rest of the season.
All right, great. That, I think that's going to do it for our recommendations. I'm going to leave it to our listeners, for Kevin, with any parting words you might have for them moving forward as we grind away as the season continues to go.
You said it perfectly. Grind away. Keep grinding. Keep on it. We got more holidays coming up. Again, happy Father's Day to you guys and all the other dads out there. And then we have 4th of July weekend coming up. People do forget to put their bids in. Take advantage of it.
Yeah, and the big part also is football is coming on the radar. I'm personally I am a fantasy football player and enter a lot of leagues and do a lot of drafts, but I'm pushing that further than I ever have in the past. Like, I'm literally not even looking until July because I really want to concentrate and make sure that I'm not overseeing anything and just really making sure every week is fine-tuned. And like Kevin said, taking it one week at a time and making sure that I'm competitive towards the end of the season.
All right. All great advice. Of course, we talked about a lot of players, but if there's any players that you're thinking on bidding on, you want us to discuss them, let us know by emailing us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. Of course, you can shoot us a DM over on the Twitter at onthewirepod. Of course, you can also join PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of over 900 members, including all the incredibly smart staff just waiting to help you win your league. Of course, I wanted to take one last chance to thank Vlad Sedler for joining us for this episode. Vlad, could you remind all of our listeners where they can either listen or read your work and what you might be working on besides football that they should be on the lookout for?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at RotoGut. And all my work for seasonal is found on fantasyguru.com. Usually I do the Fab Values article that comes out every Saturday, and more of a freestyle piece from the gut. And I just come up with different interesting topics. Last week I was stuck on a topic and ended up really diving into the history of leadoff hitters and how this year that's really shifted more than ever, and how valuable that is, having somebody that gets that extra at bat and opportunity and protection in the lineup. And always fun to come up with new topics and ideas. That's it. So I really appreciate you guys having me on. This is a very sharp crew that I'm sitting here working with, and honestly, like, one of the best outlines I worked with in a long time.
Thanks for that, Vlad. We are extremely proud to have you have made the time to come on our podcast, our 20th episode overall. After that, that's going to do it for this week's episode of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, leaving a rating or review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80grade. It's all spelled out. And Kevin at HastingKevin. Keep an eye out for Kevin's weekly Fab preview article every Sunday, as well as my Fab review article titled Waiver Watcher every week. Both can be found over at pitcherlist.com and by following at pitcherlist on the Twitter for updates. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we are a proud member of the Pitcherlist Podcast Network, along with 20 other incredible podcasts, including Nick Pollock and Friends, which Vlad was recently on himself. So make sure to go back and listen to get a lot more insight on who Vlad is and his time in the industry. And make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods to get updates about every new episode that drops from each of them, and give them all a listen. We wish you all the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Vlad for joining us. And for Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.